Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. My name is Martin Michaels, and I'll be your host for this evening's conference call brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at True Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, our advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. Just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. People's opinions, really. However educated and experienced as these thoughts and opinions might be, at the end of the day, they are still just that. They're just people's opinions. And it is always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. If I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you have a separate page come up with just two items on it, otherwise a blank page. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you would find yourself in, potentially. On the right is the common law default process, of course, mostly known for its national 85% win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. But most people know it for. It's what it's usually purchased for. But it's actually not why we have it up here. The reason that we have it up here is once you've gone through the jurisdictionary course a couple times, and then you start to go through the common law default, you'll see very quickly that it acts as basically a real-life homework assignment to what you learned about in jurisdictionary. A lot of those core pillars of procedure that you learned about in jurisdictionary, you're now acting out in a real-life scenario with the common law default. And so when you factor that with the fact that it is such a high win rate, and then, of course, traffic scenarios are the vast majority of the time the least strenuous of court scenarios, the least severe severity of an outcome if something doesn't go exactly the way that we want it to go. That's probably why folks find it a little more palatable to have that be their first experience in a real courtroom drama. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary at $250 and the common law default at $150. All right, now if we back out of that, back to the homepage of Your Remedies in the Law, and again, in the upper right-hand corner, we see the login and register. That reminds us to remind you to pick yourself up a membership at Your Remedies in the Law at your earliest convenience. A lot of wonderful features that comes with that. A lot of things to see and learn about there at Your Remedy. Of course, you get the phone number and the PIN for every single call. And so with that being actually on the call, during the questions and answers portion, you're given almost unlimited access to speak with the various information providers about the various topics. And, of course, the fact that every call is recorded, you have access now to archives as well. So you have years and years and years of calls, a vast wealth of knowledge and experience to go through. Now, if this still is not an option for you just yet, we do have Freedom's Radio that is 100% free to use. Every evening, the calls are streamed live at freedomsradio.com. There's even a little question bar where you can type in a question or a comment, click submit. That shows up on our end. We read those out over the air, and the actual information provider will answer those questions. So you don't get the one-on-one like you would by having a membership, but at least you don't ever have to miss a call again if you don't wish. As I said, there's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio. All right, on to the next subject. Most of you all probably noticed now on virtually every page that we have that map of the United States. That is Grass Fire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially how it works is this. You've got a very, very user-friendly setup wizard. You know, put your name in here, click next, that sort of thing. Somewhere in the middle, it's going to have you choose from a list of topics what your interests are. This list of topics is very, very healthy, very detailed, ranging anything from status change to home foreclosure remedies to IRS matters, credit card issues, traffic, health rights, veterans' rights, on and on and on. If you can think of it, you'll find it in that list. Of course, you can choose multiple items if you have multiple interests. And as you begin to wrap up that setup wizard, it'll have you choose a radius. Are you looking for citywide, countywide, statewide, hence the former name, or some custom distance in between? This course is how far away from the home are we wanting to go? And when it's all said and done, it puts it together much how a lot of folks would probably describe social media, though nothing like a social media. It's very custom, very private. But how a lot of folks would probably describe as a social media, it's going to put you in contact with people right there in your local area that share the same interest. The idea is maybe you sit down there one day and you say, will this happen to me today? First half a dozen people say, well, they shouldn't be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. That's what's wrong with this country, et cetera, et cetera. Probably truthful and accurate statements, but I don't know how much of a help it's going to be in your educational process, though. But then maybe at some point somebody pops in there and says, I'll tell you what I would do where I'm similarly situated. I'd go down to my local county courthouse, go to the law library. By the way, if you didn't know, every county's got a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library, free of the taxpayer. And I'd look up these terms and see what the definitions are, and that would give you a good understanding of what you're dealing with and kind of give you an idea of where to start. And then I'd also watch this YouTube video. Well, now we're starting to get somewhere. Maybe a few more people down the road, somebody else pops in and says, what that gentleman said about the going to the courthouse, I definitely agree with that. Also, I'd check out this website. I don't know, maybe yourremediesinthelaw.com. And check out this particular educational process. Well, you see where I'm going with this, folks. So the idea here is to put the power of communication, the power of education back in the hands of the common man. Once done so, and now you've learned how to handle your own affairs, your own matters, now you're basically handling everything yourself. There's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. You're perfectly legal. That is your right to do that. And that's all we're trying to do with Grass Fire Communications is just simply get folks to start talking again. All right. Most of you probably noticed every time you visit your remedies in the law, you're met with that little blue box that pops up asking if you want to continue on to your remedy or stop and check out America's Restoring America. The reason we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. Too often we hear, I wish I'd heard about this or wish I'd known about that, before blank happened to me or whatever the situation might be. And so we put that up there to prompt folks to explore. Your Remedy has grown quite large in size over the last few years, last 5 years or so. A lot of different information providers, a lot of topics of discussion. And then everything that is encompassed in Your Remedy is in the law, quite a bit. Well, Your Remedy is just one of a dozen, half, two dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So chances are, for most of you, there's probably quite a bit that you haven't seen yet or that you've missed. And so we put that up there again to remind folks at their convenience to do a little exploring and check out, see what else is available to them. Of course, if you ever have a question, if we have a particular information provider that could assist you with your particular situation or something of that sort, you're always welcome to reach out to us. You can email me directly, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com. You can call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250, and somebody will usually be back with you very, very quickly. Now, of course, we always like to throw out there as well that, you know, there's never any guarantees with anything, any endeavors with these information providers. You know, we strive for the best. We aim for the best. Usually we are pretty successful at that. Our information providers, I should say, are pretty successful at that. If there's any question of that, we encourage you to check out yourremediesinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about our information providers. But sometimes things happen in life, and when they do, you have to roll with them, deal with them like you would with anything else. That brings us here to our next subject, starting to wind down here. This next portion we call our caveat emptor, or buyer beware. When you come aboard, if you come aboard with an information provider, you're doing just that. You're coming aboard directly with an information provider. Now, these info providers pay for advertising at Your Remedy, and this would be a cost or an expense to that info provider along with any other cost associated with your particular educational process or whatever it is that that you might be interested in. Now, that brings us to an even more specific question or point. What is the credit policy or the refund policy like at Your Remedy? Well, there is none. Things like e-books and whatnot, those are all sales final. And then as far as your educational processes, like with your information providers, if there was going to be a talk of a credit or a refund or something like that, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. And even then, it's usually very few and far between, folks. Usually it has to be extenuating circumstances. Again, you're expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any information provider's time or any particular educational process. All right, lastly, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conference calls are guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we all can learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. Let me take a moment here and see if we have any new callers, any housekeeping that needs to be done. I'm not really seeing any, so let's go ahead and proceed. Mr. Edward, do you have anything add there before we bring on our speaker?
Yes, I see a first-time caller from Logan, Utah, ending in 7808. I'd like to inquire, if I may please, how you heard about our call tonight.
I'm not sure whether I'm unmuted or not.
Yes, you are. I hear you perfectly clear.
A friend referred me to the call. A little bit lost from the beginning. I don't know whether you were referring to a website or anything or attempting to figure it out.
Okay, I'm looking at a board of all the people that are on the call tonight that have checked in, and it shows a little check mark next to each name that are people that are in the database that have already said hello, introduced themselves, et cetera. And when there's someone who has never called in before, it shows an exception. And that gives me the opportunity to say welcome and learn where you heard about us, which you've done. My name is Michael. May I know your first name, please?
Jason.
You said Mason?
Jason.
Jason, like in the Argonauts.
Correct.
All right. Great book, by the way. Have you read it in Latin?
I have not read it in Latin.
We had to in high school. Oh, boy. No, I'm teasing. All right. So welcome to the call, Jason. And do you know what this call is about specifically?
I believe so. Are you referring to some website, and are you on a Zoom somehow? What's this visual? The first time.
Okay.
Sounds like you're referring to something, and I'm not joined that way.
Okay. First off, this is not a Zoom call. It's just a straight teleconference call like in the old days. We're all old school here pretty much. So I am and have been invited to speak multiple times on Zoom, and I do. However, when I do, I don't allow my video camera to be functioning. I just don't want my face out there. And when you understand and have greater depth as to who we are, what we have been doing for the last near 30 years, you'll get to appreciate for perhaps the fact that we don't want to be seen. We don't want to be found if we can help it. That's not going to stop any three-letter agency. We know that. But we can at least take steps for our privacy, for our family, and our safety. The website, the umbrella website that we're operating through is something called Americans Restoring America. www.americansrestoringamerica. This is an umbrella website. There's like 30, 35 websites underneath it. Each website deals with a specific passion or issue that we as Americans may have. Some are specific to law. Others are to health and things like that. The common thread through all of them is something called Grass Fire Communications. And that enables people to communicate anonymously by venue and by specific type topic. And those two combinations allow people to network in their venue to bring about the kind of society that they want to have for their local venue. And so that's primarily who we are and what we're talking about. The calls that I do nightly, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday night, focus on different aspects of the law. And the reason for that is because, as one of the websites say, your remedy is in the law.com. And it shows you how to identify yourself properly, which is what tonight's call is about, for a political citizenship status. The call tomorrow night will be how that identification is utilized in litigation in courts, particularly with the plaintiff being the prosecutor in matters. The Wednesday night call is how to initiate the rearrangement of your business affairs in such a way as to reduce or basically eliminate tax collections based upon commerce. And the Thursday night call is a kind of a focus on home foreclosures typically. And Saturday is about how to operate all of your assets to a point where you become judgment proof. That is to say, you own nothing, but you control everything. So there's nothing to take away from you. I take on this part of the call. I usually do a preamble to give the speaker tonight, GW, an opportunity to get here. And when he does, then Martin will, that's the host of tonight's call, will interrupt me and we go right into what GW has to talk about for this week and then open it up to Q&A, questions and answers. So I hope we've answered your questions on a 30,000-foot view.
I believe so. Like I said, at the beginning of the call, you said here in the top left, and then over here on the right.
That particular website that Martin was referring to is www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. Your remedy is in the law.
Had no idea that was where you were looking. That's why I asked about Zoom and everything else, because obviously he was referring to something that I had no clue about.
And, you know, I'm glad you pointed that out. Martin, would you do me the kindness of going to that basic script that we have and put that notice in there, if you would, we're referring to your remedies in the law. That's a great point. Thank you, Jason.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Again, if you're looking at the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if you look up in the upper right-hand corner, you see the login and register. That's where you would register if you were, you know, a first-timer, and if you wanted to pick up a $10 a month monthly membership, so you have full access to all the different features. That's where you would see that. And then just above that, there's a little picture of the Constitution in the upper right-hand corner. If you click on that, another page comes up that's just got two items on it, otherwise a blank page. And that is a outstanding starting point, jumping point for folks that are, you know, that this basically is all new to. And those two items are on the left, the jurisdictionary course, which again is a 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. And then on the right is the common law default process, which is actually mostly known for traffic court scenarios. It's a traffic remedy, but we have it up there because it also acts as kind of a real-life homework assignment for what you learned about in the jurisdictionary, which is the one on the left.
All right.
And that's all.
Thank you. So as a preview for tonight's call, there are two completely different forms of due process recognized by our constitutional system in this republic. One sees the government as having very limited powers, which means it sees the individual as having lots of power. The other sees the government as having almost unlimited powers, which means it sees the individual as having nearly no power or rights at all. The first system of law was created by the original citizens of the colonies by way of the constitutions of the states, and later when they created the Constitution for the United States of America, i.e. to say the federal government, this system of due process applies to the citizens in that state when the federal government is interacting with the citizens of the various states. This form of due process is the one that we hear about all the time, but which 70 years ago, in a conspiracy of high treason by all the judges and prosecutors in the states, it has supplanted this law system and due process that recognizes almost no rights. The other, cited in the previous paragraph that I just mentioned, was created by the citizens of the state specifically for the federal government, specifically for the United States, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of our federal constitution. It is a system of law of very limited, slightly limited communism, and we suppose and was supposed to be limited to only federal areas and those under direct federal authority. This included almost exclusively the District of Columbia, conquered lands no longer in rebellion and their citizens, but not brought into our constitutional system destined to become states. The way the United States Constitution was set up, it was forbidden to be imposed upon any of the people, or we the people, as that term is given meaning within the constitutions. From the beginning, the people, or we the people, have been defined as those people of European ancestry, and none other. Having the United States government operating under very slightly limited communism was not a problem because the framers specifically forbid this government body from having citizens of their own, and the citizens who traveled from the several states to the federal areas naturally carried with them all their rights, rights that existed as a function of being a citizen of their state government. The original intent has been made clear by the Supreme Court of the United States and was clearly stated that in the immigration laws before the 14th Amendment was adopted. Until the 14th Amendment was adopted, as it's ratified by Congress on Thursday, July 9th, 1868. No others could have become citizens, and the federal government was forbidden to have citizens that, and due to this, not citizens were subject to this system of law of very slightly limited communism. It's important to understand that the Civil War was not about the North and the South fighting each other over slavery. The actual crux of the Civil War was the federal government putting in place a mechanism to usurp the state governments as far as the hierarchy of who was in charge. As of that date, Negro ancestors of slaves were granted a form of citizenship, and it just happened to be the citizenship of the federal government, a government operating under communism. The federal government was the go-to place for protecting these former African slaves. Now, New York and Pennsylvania both, at that time, offered their state citizenships to the former African slaves. However, fearing the reprisal of what we call today racism, these people chose by and large to become federal citizens over state citizens. And they, in doing so, transferred themselves from having constitutional rights offered by the several states to mere civil rights offered by the federal government. Two classes of citizenship under two different classes of systems of law before the 14th Amendment created a new class of citizen now, which exclusively was of other than European ancestry. People generally refer to themselves as citizens of the United States. The Supreme Court of the United States has made it clear that before the 14th Amendment was adopted, that meant that they were citizens of their state of domicile because the United States, i.e. the federal government, had not yet been given the authority to have actual permanent citizens. After the adoption of the 14th Amendment, citizens of the United States, or a U.S. citizen, took on an actual legal meaning, not a common referred euphemism by people throughout the world referring to those people south of Canada, north of Mexico as U.S. citizens. No, this now became something established in law. And from that moment forward, it means, quote, a citizen of the federal government, which is other than those of European ancestry and therefore other than those that have common law or American natural common law rights. It's been the studies of the author of this, which is Bill May. It's not myself. I'm not the author of what you're hearing right now. Where did I go here? So Bill May found that, just one second. Here we go. Bill May has not been able to find a legal name for the first class of citizenship. In Bill May's Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal case that he read, they were defined, but by what they were not defined. The court stated that they were just simply, quote, not citizens of the United States, end quote. Since then, I can tell you on a sidebar, Michael Edward and several others on this call have found the proper expression of these people at Title 8, Section 1502 of the United States Code, and that is the legal term American national. Prior to this application, it was also these people were also commonly referred to as Union State citizens. In fact, you can go to an old form from the Internal Revenue Service, a W-8 Ben form, where you will see the phrase Union State Citizen actually printed on their document. From a logical perspective, From a logical perspective, in legal proceedings, they're best defined not by what they are, but by denying what they are, not just as the Ninth Appeals Court did. And for the current legislative branch courts to assume jurisdiction, the court must assume and move on the claim that the person is a citizen of the United States. Therefore, this is the secret claim that the prosecutor is making in court that has to be denied right up front. Deny being a citizen of the United States, that is, by the 14th Amendment. So, I just learned that GW has joined us. Hello, brother.
Hello.
How was your week?
You know, my week has been pretty good. I had a chance to meet up with some of my team over in California here on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So I scooted out and came over to California and still here. A little cool here at night, which is kind of nice. Just getting things done from here and enjoying myself. How was your week there, Michael?
Oh, as always, fantastic. Thank you for asking.
Okay, all right.
So what new nuggets have you come across this week that you're sharing with us?
You know, not much new on the American National Front other than I've got a client right now that I just took in. He was kind of a... I don't know if it has anything to do with people, you know, on this call, to be honest, but a lot of the people that I deal with are international players, do a lot, utilize their passport all the time, and are in multiple different countries. And one of the things, of course, that the American national status affords you and puts you in a better position to prevail against, let's put it this way, global taxation, is, of course, correcting your status and operating that way and learning how to use the instruments, the W-8, BEN, and other various forms of correcting other things like your bank account and brokerage accounts and things like that. And this particular gentleman is predisposed to being able to get visas and things like this to get into different countries. One of the things that is a little unnerving for these people, I don't know if anybody's been through the visa process, but I've become not an expert on it, but a lot more familiar with it in the last 2 or 3 months, is that when they apply for a visa, at a certain point when they go through their interview and whatnot, they've got to give up their passport at that time, and then it's mailed back to them, okay? Usually you're using an agent, okay, that is working with the State Department in a foreign country, and it's mailed back to that. I don't know exactly. I believe it's because they stamp the visa actually in the passport, okay? So it's got to go to an alternative place where you don't have access to it in any way, shape, or form other than they stamp it and then they mail it back and then you've got your visa and you can set your flight plans and everything else, you know, usually within a, you know, period of time after that. There's some little hacks around that, which is what you know, is why we use that forward ticket process. Or onward ticket process that I talk about, you know, how we actually get the tickets that actually pass muster with the State Department, but you don't actually really use, and they're very, very, very inexpensive rather than booking an actual ticket. The conundrum is that when they're without their passport, they feel a little naked. So this gentleman has 2 passports, which I never knew you could have a duplicate passport, okay? Regular American, you know, U.S. passport and have 2 running at the same time. And he walked me through the process and was talking to me about it, and I said, wow, so why don't you proceed to try to get this done and do 2. And so that's what we're working on. is that's just the kind of new little caveat that we're kind of working on, and looking at the process and documenting that so that other people
that's
are so exposed that would want to do that kind of a same thing could have that, so they're never without a passport even when they turn it in and they have to have it, get it mailed back, you know, with their visa. So anyway, that's just kind of a little new nuance that we've been looking into and trying to work with.
Super.
So other than yeah. So anyway, that might spark some questions. I don't know, in the audience there, if there's anybody that is on this call that's, does
sure.
those kind
we
of
have,
things.
We have two first-time callers tonight, GW. Jason's joining us from Utah. And we have another first-time caller from Missouri, and from Warsaw, with a phone number ending in 2582. Would you be so kind as to say hello and share with us how you heard about us tonight? Hi there. Warsaw, Missouri, phone number ending in 2582. I'm Michael Edmund. Would you share how you heard about us tonight, please? Or not? All right. That's fine. Thank you for joining us this evening. Go ahead, Martin. Why don't you open it up for Q&A, and we'll go from there.
All right. Sounds good. Well, now is the time for questions and answers, folks. *2 on your keypad if you're on the call. So if you're on the call with us, in other words, you dialed in a number, you put in a PIN, you're on the call with us. *2 at this time to raise your hand, and we'll unmute you one at a time and keep ourselves in an orderly fashion in that way. If you're listening at freedomsradio.com, the free streaming at Freedoms Radio, type your questions or comments in the question bar at this time, but don't forget now to click submit. If you don't click the submit button underneath, we don't see it. And let me get a refresh here.
Okay. While you're doing that, I will add in a few interesting maybe nuggets for people listening in right now. Been in conversations with a gentleman that lives in a foreign country. He's a U.S. citizen and is part of a couple different networks, podcasts that goes internationally with, he started, he's not the gentleman I'm speaking of, but Simon Black is the Sovereign Man broadcast. It's a gentleman that actually started it. And then there's another broadcast. This individual is he's kind of like Michael Edwards on this other broadcast. He's the one that hosts it, gets the questions and facilitates it. Anyway, he reached out through another client that I have that is another Globetrotter that's involved in a lot of these different groups. And this guy reached out to me, and here was one of the reasons. He wants to get his status corrected, but he wants to get his status corrected and his family also, especially his military-age children. And the reason he told me was that all of his family, of course, is categorized as U.S. citizens, and he is very, very up in arms about what's going on in America and of course, the Middle East conflict and things like this, and the rumblings about conscripting, military-age individuals in America to, forcibly join the service. And so he was asking me questions about that and kind of came to the conclusion that, you know, really, it's not a absolute foregone conclusion, but it seems to have a lot of validity that definitely correcting your status gets you out of, you know, the judicial being required to become a juror, voting, and, you know, maybe a couple other things, but also the fact that will put you in a better place not to be voluntarily or mandatorily requested to join and be put on a list for service would be if you're categorized as an American national rather than a U.S. citizen, which is categorized as property in the franchise of the federal government. And so this person, that was pretty much the kind of the factor that was pushing him to do this with him and his family. And so I just wanted to throw that out there. That puts you in a much, much better light to be able to avoid something like that if it were ever to be enacted. You know, it would probably pretty much only be able to be enacted for their property and their franchises, which are U.S. citizens. So there you go. Anybody raise their hand there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. First up, we've got Charlie. Go ahead. You've been unmuted.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for sharing all your pearls there, GW. And the one, when you started out, the gentleman who has a second passport, did I take it that he was asking, you know, desiring to now get status on that second passport to reflect an American national? Is that what you were saying?
Oh, yes. He'd be dumping both those passports and doing two corrected American national passports. Right.
Okay, so does that was kind of going into what I was – anyway, currently he does not have a corrected passport, not one. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so then my next question was going to be, well, if you're doing a second one, I guess you're going to see how, and that presumably would become an offering to new clients. Hey, do you want to get
correct.
One or two passports with this corrected status?
Correct.
Is that your anticipation? Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, we're figuring out the process right now, so he's the guinea pig.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Thanks for that clarification. And thank you, Michael, for these awesome intros. I'm going to request an audio of this one, too. So, anyway, thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, next up, we have Jennifer. Good evening, Jennifer. You've been unmuted.
Jennifer.
Good evening. GW, Martin, and Michael. Well, I just wanted, do you know the conscription ages? I just have kids, and I'm just wondering if they were going to be conscripted. Do you know what the ages usually are approximately?
Yeah, it's like 18 to, I believe it's 18 to 25, somewhere around there, 18 to 26, something like that.
Oh, okay. Well, my kids are older than that. And anyway,
yeah.
But that's my main question.
Okay.
So I think Michael had sent you that application for registration for a diplomatic license and tax exemption card and a driver license. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about it, if you looked at it at all.
I did. I, in fact, I believe I even sent, let's see, I believe I sent, let's see here. Wouldn't be on my side. Okay, I don't get this transcript. Shoot. Can't play it. Yeah, I shot back to Michael, I believe, a couple of different audio recordings with my thoughts on that. And for the life of you, I can't tell you right now what I said. Sorry.
Well, I mean, the only reason I'm doing it is because I don't want to end up in jail by not having a license or registering the car or anything like that. But and I also don't want to get a regular license and registration. So I just thought, I came across this on the internet. I actually applied to the DMV and they gave me this information to apply to this place. And even though I'm not asking actually for a diplomatic license, I'm asking for an American national license. Whether, you know, or if not, I'll have a diplomatic one. And then the tax exemption card, so I don't even know what sort of tax you're exempted from or anything, but I just thought I'd play around with it and see what happens.
Okay.
So do you think that's dangerous or it's okay, I guess?
Oh, man. You know what? After I get off the call, I'll go back to my audio notes and transfer that to a email and send it back to Michael so he can send it to you, okay?
Okay. I think I did hear one short one, but I didn't quite understand what it meant by it's dangerous having a diplomatic license or something in the future. So, but
Oh, anyway. Now you pricked my a little. Yeah, you know, having a diplomatic plate. I was thinking about this. You know, if you're able to have a diplomatic plate, you know, I mean, it's kind of like the within the federal. You know, I think what I said was, for me, okay, wanting to be somewhat anonymous and, you know, not on the radar, so to speak, I just don't know about, when things get, you know, and they could in the future get really rough. In certain cities, like New York, you know, driving around, being parked with a diplomatic plate. I think I said something to that effect. With like, I don't know if I'd want that. That's just me.
Well, do you have a regular plate? Do you just get a regular plate? Because having no plate would be more conspicuous.
Yeah, and all the vehicles that I operate have just a regular license plate, they have the regular tags on there, and you know, don't get hassled, don't get, you know, just draw any kind of suspicion whatsoever. But if, you know, we talked about this many times before on this call, I know, but yes, you can. There's certain things that you can do, like Paul said, you know, in the scriptures, he says, you know, all things are lawful for me, but are all things expedient? Meaning, I mean, should you? Just because you can, okay? You need to really, in your own heart, in your own mind, what is your better judgment, the Holy Spirit, what is it indicating to you? for me, I've said this before, I had a friend who was, not a real close friend, but we used to do a lot of business together. I edited all the videos that he was sending and driving over to me, during the Waco siege. Okay. During the 56-day standoff. And, during Waco, you remember that time, right?
Yeah.
93, whatever. I mean, it's a blur now, but anyway, I was the only one that you could find that, you know, felt not afraid and confident enough to, you know, take this material and edit it up and get it back to him. So we used to sit there at restaurants and whatnot. And I'd smoke a cigar. He'd have his cigarettes and we'd, you know, tell stories. And, he didn't have any license on his brand new, Ram truck at that time. And, he was very well educated in the law. He was an engineer by trade and, surveyor and, very astute, very well disposed to use his, knowledge and his ability to, pretty much arrest any kind of altercation. Okay. Because he was stopped constantly. Okay. And he called them interviews, you know. He didn't call them stops. He called them interviews, from sheriffs and police and whatever, you know. They'd see his truck out the road. It's got no license plate on it and they'd pull him over. So, and like I think I've told the story several times, he did that for years. Okay. Decades. But I saw him one day and we got together. He was just, this is well after Waco. And we, got together and I noticed that his brand new truck, but now it had license plates and tags on it. I said, hey, what's the deal with the license plate and tags? He goes, hey, man. He says, you know, been there, done that. He goes, I got twins now, you know, married. I got twins, you know, they're young. He says, I just don't need, you know, all the interviews anymore. So
yeah,
what he was saying is for him, it's like, okay, go ahead.
Oh, it was that story that made me decide to look for something that could possibly prevent all of that, all the confrontations and the waste of time and still not be in the system. That actually is what motivated me to look for something.
Sure. Hey, you know, more power to you. If you find something like that and you feel really motivated to do it and it's just part of your journey, then I don't see anything. I don't see anything super bad about it. I don't think you're, if you prevail with it, man, it's going to be interesting to hear the stories.
I guess the main question was, like, when we filled out the passport form, you wanted, like, that the country and the address, I mean, the postal location and different things were written a certain way. And I'm just wondering if I need to do the same type of thing on this form and whether you could look at it in that light.
I think that'd be good. Yeah. Look at the way that it's done on the W8VEN form, you know?
Oh, mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, it isn't the one that went to the State Department though. The passport one went to the State Department. So, I mean, which one would I copy?
Well, okay. You got to take the different aspects. Like, for instance, where it says, you know, country if outside, like on the DS-11 form, where it says country if outside United States, you know, everybody that we have puts on there whatever state they live in. Like,
okay.
for you to be New York, that's the country that's outside the United States in the United, and we're talking about United States proper, as in U.S., the U.S. corporation.
Right.
So that's the 10 square miles of the District of Columbia. So anything that's outside that is foreign to that jurisdiction.
Right.
So it's a reason you'd put it that way. Okay. There's other different little.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
All right. I'll do that. Okay. I don't want to take up any more of your time. I was just
wondering.
Anyway, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Thank you so much. And Mr. Edward, did you have a question?
Well, there's a couple of things that I want to bring into the conversation. First, for your new first-time callers tonight, welcome again. I want to share with you a website that I strongly encourage you to visit and read. The original website that it is being built is AmericanByBirth.com. I'm not sending you there. Where I'm sending you is the PDF that is included in that website, and just sending you directly to this to read. It is nothing basically but court cases. That's all it is, just court cases. But they're laid out in such a way it takes you from point A to point Z for the benefit of the entirety of our discussion every Monday night and mostly Tuesday nights. So that website is www.oncewewerecolonists.com. Oncewewerecolonists.com. It's 23 pages, and whereas one would normally fall asleep reading court cases, you're going to find this one most invigorating, because it will, well, it's like telling a young person there is no Santa Claus. You know, when they hear it the first time, there is no tooth fairy. When they hear it for the first time, you've got their full attention. It's personal. So that's the one thing I wanted to share with you. The other thing that I wanted to share with you is a quote by one of our founding fathers, Samuel Adams. And the reason I want to share this quote with you is because on two different callers tonight, I heard something that I just want to make absolutely clear to be understood. And when you hear this quote, it's going to strike home, it should strike home with you as to what's really on the table here. The author is Samuel Adams, and he said once, "If you love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude better than the animating contest of freedom, go home from us in peace. We ask not your counsel nor your arms. Crouch down and lick the hand which feeds you. May your chains set lightly upon you. And may posterity forget that you were ever our countrymen." End quote. The purpose of these calls and these tools that we're putting in front of you, and the justification for the proper application of these tools, is not to incite insurrection. Not in the criminal aspect of insurrection, but to encourage you to learn how to position yourself so that you have the leverage, should you choose, in a legal proceeding to exercise your correct and proper political citizenship status, i.e., someone having constitutional rights versus another having mere civil rights. And I just wanted to strike that home to you. Go ahead. Back to you, Mr. Martin.
All right. Next up, we've got Kent in West Virginia. Go ahead, Kent.
Good evening, folks. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Greg, I wanted to ask you, the plates that you're talking about, when you're talking about plating a conveyance or a vehicle or tagging a conveyance or a vehicle. Are you talking about the DOT plates that people are now speaking of and running tests on?
I wasn't. No, no. I don't have those plates. No.
Okay. Are you familiar with those plates?
Oh, sure, sure. Sure am.
Okay. Yeah. Are you familiar with them? Are you familiar with them when they're issued to an American national rather than some of the problems people have had obtaining them as U.S. citizens?
Not necessarily. If you have a first-hand,
yeah, so,
you know.
Yeah, I do. I have a short story. There's a gentleman in New York State who I personally know, and so there'd be no reason for him to tell me something that wasn't true. He said that it's now possible to obtain, I don't know the whole procedure, but it has to be done a certain way, and I think it'll only work if you have, the State Department has you in the status of an American national. But he said you can now obtain these DOT plates. The first week he had them on his car, within the first 2 or 3 days, he was stopped by a New York State trooper. And the trooper, I guess he uses his passport card for ID. And he had, prior to that, he had kept his expired New York plates on his SUV or van. And he had notified the state and through, I guess, I don't know, advertisements in the newspaper or certain recordings with the county court clerk or with the county clerk that the vehicle was exempt. And he was using the state tags. But anyway, he decided to go over to these DOT plates. The trooper stopped him, came back, and said to him, okay, sorry to have bothered you. And so he asked the trooper, well, what does it say? The trooper said it says non-commercial, no jurisdiction. Now, he says the tag number is assigned to the all-cap name, and you could use that tag, that same tag, on other vehicles or a trailer or an RV, something like that. So this is in the early stages. There's also a gentleman doing this in North Carolina, and I understand somebody's already done it in New Jersey, and they're saying that these plates take the place of the state regulation Z plates.
Hmm.
So is that anything that you would know anything about at this point in time?
No. No. No, that's a totally new little nugget nuance to me.
Okay. Because
so,
we know in the past,
yeah.
We know, excuse me, we know in the past that with these DOT plates, people had all kinds of problems. But I think at that point in time, at that point in time, people were obtaining them as U.S. citizens and putting themselves back into the system, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first comment on that. The second comment I would make, I had just come back, and I was in a health facility this afternoon, and I noticed on the desk at the, in the reception area that while I was standing there waiting, that there was a multicolored trifold pamphlet on the desk that says, are you a citizen or are you an American? And then it has a picture of the American Civil Peace flag on it. And this is so I got into a conversation with one of the people behind the desk, and they said, oh, there's somebody else that works here that's looking into this and taking some classes. So I wonder if you had heard anything. I'm not telling you this to compete with what you and Michael are doing. I'm just putting out this out there as general information. Have you heard anything about, you know, any such group like that?
Did you find out the group name?
Well, it says on it, contact www.americas, with an S on the end, -assembly.com.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Okay.
Okay. You like them? You don't like them? Or?
Hold on 1 second. I'll go right there. I know I got it,
I don't think this is the end of my right, so.
Okay. Hold on, I'm a slow typer.
Okay.
See if I got that written right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've been here before.
Are you thinking Ted Turner?
No, this is not Ted Turner. Yeah. See, they're embracing the not that I'm saying it's incorrect, but non-citizen national of the United States, non-citizen national, we the people.
Whoa.
That's the first thing.
The American Assembly is a think tank at Columbia University, founded in 1950 by General Dwight Eisenhower. It's become his most enduring achievement. What?
Are you talking about America's plural assembly?
Yeah. In other words, America's Assembly, I found the home page on Brave. And then when I looked
to
the right,
too, but...
then they get AmericanAssembly.org. Huh.
Okay,
are we still talking about the same group?
No, this one was established in 2020. This is, Michael, this is America's plural hyphen assembly.com. Okay.
Yeah, I see it.
So, yeah. They got a, I do recognize the Remnant Revolution Tour people, Robert and Jamie. I know who they are.
Okay.
And I believe this is, believe it or not, connected to David Strait.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I didn't have any chance to research it. I just asked him for a copy of the brochure, and I just kept presenting it. That's all.
Sure. I mean, who knows? They might be, they might be trying to
reestablish themselves.
Reestablish themselves in a better way. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Rebrand.
Well, after
rebrand
that debacle in Utah or Wyoming, they need to.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah,
I'm going
to they especially like using the term, American state nationals. Okay. That's on their site here.
Well, I'll find out some more on this. I asked them to have the party that knows more about it and that left them the brochure that apparently also works there on certain days. I asked them to have that party get in touch with them, see what happens.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Okay.
Hopefully they're doing good. Hopefully they're doing good things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Michael. Yeah. Thank you, Martin.
Okay.
Thank you, Ken.
Yes, sir.
All right. *2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. *2 at this time to raise your hand. Let me check over here on the Freedoms Radio side. I don't see anything popped up there. All right, and now we've got Bruce in Texas. Go ahead, sir. You've been unmuted.
Hey, thanks. Hey, you guys had mentioned earlier on the call something about someone that had two passports. I'm sure you're familiar with a couple of different companies out there that offer passport services to get you multiple passports from other countries. I'm not sure I understand that in the case of correcting your status, that you would have to correct your status for multiple countries or just in the U.S.
No. So we're clear. This gentleman has had a U.S. passport and a duplicate U.S. passport for quite some time. Okay.
Oh, okay.
We're talking about putting together and finding out the procedure to try to apprehend a corrected passport and a duplicate corrected passport.
Okay.
Like an American.
Different situation than having multiple countries citizenship. Okay, and so in your opinion, is it still a good idea to have multiple countries citizenship?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, you know that it's an expensive undertaking.
There are some countries that are cheaper than others or worth having, and some worth not worth having. But obviously, it gives you options if the current regime becomes too much more of a police state.
Yep.
So
that's
okay.
That
answers that question. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, that clears us up here once again. So make another pass here. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. If not, for a second sense that we're starting to get here to the end of our questions and answers portion. And, of course, once we wrap that up, we will usually bid our speaker a good evening. So let's, any other questions, speak now or for 1 week, hold your peace. Do you see anything else there, Mr. Edward? I think that's that might be it for us.
No, time to take us home.
All right. Well, thank you so much, DW. Great call, and we look forward to speaking with you again next week.
Okay.
All right. All right. All right. All right, well, that's going to conclude this evening's call for us, folks. Join us again tomorrow night, same time, same place. We'll be continuing on with the litigation aspect of it, the point of the spear, as it were, with our speaker, Brother John, talking about how this actually can interface in the live court scenarios. And then on Wednesday, we'll be back with Herr Slevin, Mr. Slevin, talking about LLCs. Thursday, of course, Mr. Edward said we'll have our normal call on home foreclosure remedies. And then Friday, we have our religious call. Saturday, we have a second religious call earlier on. And then lastly, we wrap up the week Saturday night with Justice Beshears. I was talking about charitable religious trusts, private interest foundations, corpse souls, things of that like. So until tomorrow night, everybody have a pleasant rest of your evening and be well.
Okay. Sounds good.
Not want to let me.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye.